Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have back with us Joshua Sherrard, President and CEO of Strategic Navigators, and we'll be talking about proper write-off etiquette for business owners. Joshua, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so I'm excited to talk about this topic because I know business people get into business for a lot of reasons, and one of the big ones is to have some great tax advantages. So when you have write-offs, you want to do them the right way, so properly, and then also, you know, make sure you're getting all the write-offs you can. So get us started with thinking about what are some of the write-offs and what is proper write-off etiquette.
You know, I often meet business owners, and this whole area of write-offs is an area that is just heavily misunderstood. The whole reason we have write-offs in the IRS code is so that, you know, you can pay for things relative to the business. But because taxes are so egregious, a lot of business owners are tempted to live out of their business. You know, so you have a lot of business owners that will just write off everything. It doesn't matter whether it's the cell phone bill for the whole family, or maybe they're taking a trip to Florida and they don't really know where the line is on, hey, whose airfare can I write off on this? You know, is it just me and my wife, or is it me and the kids, or how does it work out? And so oftentimes what happens is this becomes a hotbed for the IRS, and they end up coming in and auditing a business because of the write-offs and just kind of what happens in that space. And so, you know, we find oftentimes that people are pushing the envelope in this space because they don't have other sound tax strategies. And so one of my first piece of advice to my clients is stop living out of the business. You know, so it's okay to spend your own money on your personal life and on the things that you do for day to day. The tax savings is not worth the risk in terms of what you might encounter by doing something inappropriate. So, you know, one of the first things I say to my clients is, hey, you got to be structured correctly. And we talked about that in other episodes where, hey, don't just be a sole proprietor, but try to be a full S corp or a full corporation. So now it's a little bit more of an arm's length transaction. It's not just you writing stuff off and throwing it on a ledger.
And when you were explaining that, the phrase commingling of funds came to my mind. Does that have an application there? Because I think commingling of funds is like money and cash and revenue, but also wouldn't it apply to the expense side of things and the write-off side of things as well?
It really does. And this is where a lot of entrepreneurs will keep the largest cash reserves in their business account because, hey, that's where they're spending the most money on payroll, the most money on supplies, or, you know, whatever it is relative to the business. But I always encourage my clients, only keep 3 months of your operating expense and no more than that in your reserves. And in some cases, depending on the frequency of your cash flow, I know a lot of doctors fall into this category where they're getting payments from insurance companies and things like that. I say, hey, don't even keep 3 months. Keep maybe a month, month and a half in there. And everything else should be pushed out through one of the many methods of getting money to you personally as an owner. That way, now you have cash on the personal side and you can actually pay for those things instead of mingling it, like you said. And it can become a real problem for business owners. They don't even remember, hey, which credit card did I drop for that meal or for that expense? And so you got to really be diligent and careful, because the moment you break that corporate veil, the IRS, or from a legal perspective, nobody else has a reason to respect it.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was thinking of is I went through a random audit several years ago, and it was, of course, grueling and literally 8 hours a day for five or six days, and every dime of everything, personal business side. And at the end, they literally give me the, you know, thumbs up screen. Everything was great, but it was grueling. Well, it was so hard to have a stack 2 feet thick of papers on my personal side and then another on my business. And it was like, what's this for? What was this for? So it is not just a matter of You know, you have to do it because it's legal and the IRS needs it, but also some things could slip through the cracks for your business. So that's what we're talking about, is getting the maximum amount of write-offs, doing it the right way, so that your business gets all the benefit that it can get.
It is, and I want to come back to, why are we doing this, right? Because a lot of times you can fall into that trap of, hey, I'm going to write that off so I can save taxes, or I have a business structure so I can save taxes.
Yeah.
There are a number of moral, legal, ethical tax strategies that you can deploy that don't require you to be shady and don't require you to be questionable. So you need to get the right kind of advisors around you who are helping you to do it correctly. Everything involving the IRS is about dotting the I's, crossing the T's, paying attention to the rules and following it. And if you do, you know, you hear wealthy people say this all the time: I don't pay that much in taxes. Why? Because I understand the tax code.
Yeah. So you talk about spending a dollar to save 40 cents. What's that all about?
Well, you know, I think of some of the farmers that I work with, and, you know, I'll go out to these farms, massive fields, and they have these huge combines that they, you know, store in the barn. And these machines cost $250,000. And I remember very clearly one experience where one farmer looks at me and he says, yeah, I bought a combine last year at the end of the year because I wanted the $250,000 write-off on my taxes. So I spent $250,000. He's in about the 40% tax bracket, so he saved 40 cents basically by doing that. And to turn around, and it still has the stickers on it because he likes his old combine better than the new combine. You look at a situation like that, and I see that happen to so many people. I was on the phone just yesterday with a business owner. They had 19 trucks, and I said, do you have 19 trucks on the road? And they had a delivery type business. And he said, no, I only have 5 drivers. I said, why do you have 19 trucks?
Yes.
And he says, well, I get the write-off every year for buying a new truck.
Oh,
I said,
wow.
Oh, you know, so what ends up happening is you're plowing money into these assets that can depreciate very quickly in the case of a vehicle. And you're also hurting yourself and the profit that you're pulling. But at the end of the day, what are you doing? You're saving 40 cents on the dollar in a tax situation that you don't really understand. So
That's so interesting, because people have it in their mind, like a business owner that doesn't have access to resources like what you guide your clients with, and they just hear, oh, capital gain or capital improvements or buying equipment or write off for this, and they think, cool, let's do it. And then, like in the case of the combine, I like the old one anyway. But here's something else that they probably don't even think about. Sure, the true straight line write off is not as much as you spend out, but in the case of these trucks, you have insurance that you're paying for, you have upkeep, you have wear and tear. There's all of these things that now are added extra expenses that go along with that initial capital outlay that are going to defray any sort of a tax write-off.
Mm-hmm. They really, and they look at it and they say, well, that's a write-off anyway as well. And, you know, you just want to be careful with those things. So I see kind of two major categories of entrepreneurs in this write-off space. I see one category where they go and they, like I said earlier, live out of the business, you know, so they're buying the fancy sports car or whatever it is, and they're traveling and they're doing all these things. You know, I had one client who, he was working from home, so he thought it was justified to buy the 85-inch flat screen TV on the business credit card. You know, I mean, it's no, those things don't pass muster with the IRS. And again, go to your tax preparer, ask them what's reasonable. The IRS has this phrase, fair and reasonable. And it's a very, you know, soft, fuzzy phrase. And it basically says a reasonable person needs to say, yeah, that passes the sniff test. And it'd be better if they just give you a hard, you know, numbers, black and white, and here's what it is. But that they throw that in there because that gives them the leverage, you know, hey, that doesn't look like it's a good write-off. So that's one category, is the people that they just kind of live out of their business. And the other category is kind of like we talked about with the trucks, where they're just kind of carelessly saying, hey, I need to spend money because I have money at the end of the year. And they do it on the business side. But what they forget is, why did they get into business in the first place? They got into business not to buy more trucks, not to buy another combine. They got into business to make money. And so how do you do that effectively and keep the taxes in check?
100%. And I think that there's probably, maybe let's even dive in a little bit deeper on reasonable expenses. What are some key points that people need to keep in mind where the line might be crossed? So maybe an example of someone that, you know, you can expense this much, but when you go over here, now we're kind of treading on the gray area of reasonable expenses.
Yeah, you know, one of the most debated areas, I would say, is vehicles, right? So a lot of people would say, oh, yeah, my business, you know, pays for my mileage, or they pay for my gas, or they, you know, whatever this is. And, you know, one of those situations, it's very difficult. I'll use a realtor as an example. It's very difficult for a realtor to just record mileage all the time. It can become a pain where you're recording the gas and the wiper blades and all that. And you're trying to take a percentage, right, of what percentage are you using for work, what percentage are you using for personal. So what I advise clients to do is, hey, let the business buy a vehicle for you. And now you do get a nice vehicle. You get the full write-off. But one of the key points here is you have to have a personal vehicle that you use for running to the grocery store, dropping the kids off, that type of thing. And so what the IRS is looking for is, hey, you got this nice vehicle. We get it. You wanted to buy this for business. You're a realtor, and you got to show your clients a nice time and all that. But what do you use to drive to the grocery store? What do you use to take the kids to school? And then you've got to produce, hey, 100% of this other vehicle, the insurance, the gas, the wiper blades, the oil change, all paid for me by personally.
Yeah.
And so now you've got two separate things. Okay, that makes sense. That's reasonable. You know, and I just tell clients, hey, if you are in doubt on whether or not you can write it off, don't. Right. Yeah. So you'd rather not risk the $100 meal or whatever it might be. And what does that save you in taxes? It's not worth it. Like you said, the 8 hours a day audit that you might have to go through. So just be conservative and use other tried and true tax strategies to save yourself money.
Love it. So when we're talking about these write-offs here, we've got to do it the right way. We've got to be reasonable. We've got to maximize and get all we can get. And you don't want to write off or use unnecessary ones. So now we go into the next step, which is, what do you do with all of this with some cash flow accounting? So how should a client be thinking about cash flow accounting?
You know, cash flow accounting, and how is that different than just regular accounting? I like to say cash flow accounting is proactive versus reactive, right? So oftentimes people just kind of plow into business and they're just going and they're doing what they're doing. Cash flow accounting is actually creating a budget. It's looking at what you're spending, knowing what your burn rate is. That's what I like to call it, the burn rate of what does it cost me to run my business? You know, if somebody's running a multi-million dollar business and they say, you know what, I know for a fact that I'm burning, or I spend on payroll and insurance and all these other things, $100,000 a month. Well, now you got to keep at least $100,000 in the checking account. You know, so it's talking about cash flow accounting. You want to make sure that you have enough in reserves to take care of your needs. Don't be in a position where you're panicking and, oh my goodness, what do I do? And that creates an undue amount of stress. The other aspect of cash flow accounting is, hey, make sure that you don't have what's called retained earnings in an unnecessary fashion. So, for instance, a lot of clients, especially with the S corporation, they will pay tax out of the business. So they'll pay their personal taxes out of the business. And then they have all this money that last year they paid the tax on, but it's still sitting in the business account. That can get really, really confusing on a cash basis. And what are you doing with all this cash? And so, again, I strongly encourage people, pull money out of the business, put it into your personal account, use the methods that are appropriate. And then if the business needs more cash, you can make what's called a shareholder loan back to the business. And now that's not taxable at all. And so that can be a very, very helpful way of looking at it. And so now as the entrepreneur, you are holding up the business. You know, your credit does that anyway, Mike. If you start a business and you want a line of credit or whatever it is, they're going to ask for your social security number. Yep. Because you're the backstop. And so same thing with cash. You should be the backstop. So cash flow accounting, you want to minimize what you're leaving in the business. Remember, cash is king. Pull that out. And you want to make sure that you have appropriate reserves for the business.
Yeah, I think that's a huge piece that people don't think about is cash flow is actually the flow of cash. And if you find yourself scrambling to make payroll or whatever your needs would be, pay vendors for inventory, and you're short of that, why would that be? Was it because there's not enough cash flow coming in, or was it because your accounts payable are, you know, stopped up and you need to get that fixed so what's owed to you is coming in, or maybe you need a line of credit to draw down on? So the cash flow accounting is really pre-planning, and that's another piece that business owners should be thinking about in all aspects of their business.
You know, it's absolutely true. I look at a lot of the CPAs, tax attorneys, some of the smartest people that I know. They tend to get lost in the weeds a little bit on detail. And as I've managed multi-million-dollar budgets, I've run organizations with, you know, over 35 departments before. And, you know, looking at how complicated you can make a ledger, I mean, you can really overcomplicate it. Even if you open up a QuickBooks, you know, business online basic version, the ledger is a little overwhelming. And so I like to encourage people, you know, my background is a pastor, so I like this saying, Jesus made a comment about the Sabbath. He said, the Sabbath is for man and not man for the Sabbath. I like to say budgets are for man and not man for budgets. You know, because at the end of the day, you don't need this out of control ledger with so many lines, so many categories. You may be putting something in different categories every time you log it. Keep it simple. Keep it to a point where it's short, it's sweet, it fits your business, and it's appropriate. And you can really push your accountant to minimize that because that's easier for you in your operation. So I encourage short ledgers.
Yeah, I that makes a whole lot of sense. And you mentioned estimated reserves. Is there a rule of thumb to best calculate reserves?
Yeah, you know, I always go, I do this for personal as well as business. I say 3 months. You know, on the personal side, I might go 6 months. But I like to say 3 months on the business side because, you know, really, if a business dries up, and they have no revenue for 3 months, now you got bigger problems, right? I mean, 3 months is a decent amount of time, but if you can have a 3 month cushion, that's a pretty healthy amount of, you know, whatever your burn rate is to keep that in your reserves. Maybe you open a CD or you have a mutual fund or something conservative associated with the business bank account where you can earn a little bit of interest. You know, I often talk about the rich man Roth, which is a wonderful tax-free vehicle that can be a helpful tool in this reserve conversation because you can be earning significant interest tax-free on this rich man Roth, and that can serve as your reserve pool, and that can be very helpful as well.
Well, that's interesting because then you have a chunk of cash, whatever that 3 month might represent, whatever dollar figure, that puts it into that vehicle, that rich man Roth, which is earning money and probably earning it at a better rate than what your bank would be paying you anyway. So that's a wonderful benefit. Yeah. But then if you need to tap into it, you're not depleting that account. You're borrowing against it while the interest is still earning on the balance. So it actually is something where hopefully you're not, you know, using it, paying it back. It's just there. And I think that's a great way to allocate those funds.
Yeah. And again, coming back to cash flow, you want to maximize your cash, right? So a lot of times people, they feel safe with a big bank balance. I think we would all be surprised if the bank would open up its ledger and tell us, hey, here's what people keep in their bank, in their checking account. I think people keep way too much money in their checking account. Number one, it's susceptible to anybody that you've given your ACH information to, you know, and nowadays companies, they just want your checking and your routing number. And, you know, it's hard to stop them once you say, okay, take some money. So that's one of the first things. You don't want to leave a big pot of cash there. Two, it's not earning anything. I mean, in a checking account, it's really not getting you anything on the business side or the personal side. So like you said, the rich man Roth is a great vehicle. You can earn interest. It can sit there. You feel secure because it's easily accessible. But at the same time, it's protected. And, you know, I can think of, for instance, auto dealers, great clients of mine. You know, they need to keep about $1 million in cash available for inventory, just go back and forth, got to buy this, got to do that. And, you know, that sits there in their checking account and they have no interest on it. But what if you could put it into a rich man Roth, earn 9-10%, and turn around and you still have it at your fingertips, but now it's protected from liability, it's protected from taxes, it's protected from volatility. I mean, it's a wonderful tool, and I encourage people to maximize their cash in vehicles like the Rich Man Roth.
Now, in that scenario, and we'll wrap up with this because this is something that's kind of, to me, kind of pulls it all together, you know, maximizing your cash and why would you have a large amount in this account earning hardly anything. But how accessible is that? So in that example of the car dealer, you know, they might say, well, Josh, that sounds great to earn 8-9% and then have access to it, but I might need it like within an hour. I might need it within 24 hours because we need to buy this batch of cars. So how accessible is their funds if they place it into that type of an account?
Yeah, you know, and I do planning with my business owners. And so, for instance, to use that $1 million example, maybe he has $200,000 in his checking account and he's got $1 million in his Rich Man Roth. The Rich Man Roth can be accessible within 24 hours, sometimes sooner than that. But I look at it and I say, if you need $1 million in an hour, there's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Any time, so you've got the 200 cash, which is liquid. You can just, you know, write a check for that, do whatever you need to do, and then within 24 hours, replenish that with the Rich Man Roth money. You know, so you always use that checking account as your kind of your launch pad, and then you backfill it, and you have these support structures with these other vehicles.
Well, 24 to 48 hours is flexible and accessible. The fear would be submit a document, and 30 days from now, you might get a check in the mail. Yeah. But no, if it's 24 to 48, that's as liquid as you need to be. And yeah, to your point, you keep 100 to 200,000 purely liquid where you can walk into the bank and say, give it to me now. But I think that's a really great thing to keep in mind. Those are good numbers. That does not, you know, handcuff you on your funds.
Right. Right.
So any final thoughts on write-off etiquette and cash flow accounting and keeping maximizing your cash? What are some final things? And then we'll wrap up with this thought.
Yeah, I encourage clients, you know, get someone around you who can help you. And sometimes that's not your CPA because the CPA, again, they're great people, but they go to school to learn how to fill out the forms, be compliant with the IRS, and we need that. But you really need a business coach. You really need someone who's coming alongside you and saying, hey, you know, what is your monthly burn rate? How much are you keeping in the checking account? How much are you doing here? And that's really when you start getting over that $300,000 of revenue, you know, now you're starting to be in rare air, and you really need to start getting some of that type of bring those wise advisors around you that can help you. They'll share with you what they do in their own businesses as well. You don't want to get someone who's not successful. You want to get someone who's successful so they personally can say, hey, this is what I do too. And I think that's going to increase your chances of success in these two areas.
Well, that reminds me of the concept of being an order taker in sales. You know, you've got the person that just says, oh, you wanted to order this widget? Okay, how many? Okay, have a nice day. Or someone that takes a consultative approach and says, okay, what are you going to be doing with those widgets? Oh, hey, have you ever considered? And so having that business advisor that can do more than just fill in the blanks on your ledger, your numbers and things like that, but to look deeper and go, why are we doing that? And what if we did it this way? And wouldn't it be better if, and to look at all of those areas of your business currently, and then also for the high-end advisors that would give you the high-end service, look at where you need to be going, you know, and going, are we on track? You know, we're looking kind of skating where the puck is headed, as Wayne Gretzky used to say. And mm-hmm. I think that becomes one of the biggest benefits of that external third-party perspective from a high-level business advisor.
100%. 100% agree with you there.
And if anyone would like to have that in their business, I'm sure you'd be more than happy to help them out. What's the best way they can reach out, learn more about you guys, and then connect with you, Josh?
Yeah, you know, I always encourage people to go to my website, stratnavinc.com, and you can learn more about me there. You can also find me on LinkedIn and love to connect with people there. There's lots of opportunities to connect, and we always do a complimentary consultation with entrepreneurs, business owners, because we believe we can help significantly as you grow your business.
Excellent. Wonderful having you on again. Thank you so much for your time, and appreciate your insights today, Josh.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.